Call our April 26, 2013 board meeting to order. I'd like to introduce our student today, Evan Carter, who's going to give our invocation. Would you all please rise?
We ask that you direct this meeting so that it is full of wisdom, productivity, and respect for one another. Thank you for helping us to accomplish our work and our goals this day. And we know that because of you, the Spirit truly does make the master. Amen.
Evan, remain standing. I'm not going to cut you loose yet. Evan Carter hails from Lebanon, Marion County, Kentucky. He's one of our own. He's an outstanding student, a great young man. He's a junior, majoring in sports management. He's a member of the SAE fraternity. He's on the WKU street marketing team and a member of the WKU Relay for Life committee. His mother and my wife teach together. So I jokingly told Nancy, my wife, to tell his mother this morning that I'd read Evan's comments and bio, and he had glowing remarks to say about his mother. So that'll get back to
him. That tells you a lot.
Anyway, Evan, thanks. We appreciate it. Keep up the good work, and you truly represent the WKU spirit. Thank you, sir.
Well done.
Let me get back to my agenda. The next matter is oath of office for our new regent, Dr. Philip Bale. And we're out of our normal environment, so I guess we'll go out in front. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was looking for the seal and the flags.
Yeah.
We'll just do it in the front of the room.
All right. I'll now ask Regent Dennison, our secretary, to call the roll.
Dr. Philip Bale?
Present.
Mr. Corey Dodds?
Present.
Ms. Cynthia Harris?
Present.
Mr. Freddie Higdon?
Present.
Mr. Jim Johnson?
Present.
Mr. James Kennedy?
Present.
Dr. Patricia Minter?
Present.
Mr. David Porter?
Present.
Mr. John Ridley? Mr. Larry Zell?
We have a majority. We're in order to conduct business. The board has the agenda. I would like to ask for approval of the agenda to proceed with one modification after, before we start a committee reports. Dr. Ransdale has asked for a little bit of time to make a few comments. So with that modification, do I have a consensus among the board to follow the agenda? Not hearing any objection, we'll proceed with the agenda with the one modification. First item is approval of minutes. I direct your attention to the first quarterly meeting minutes of January 25th, 2013. I do have a request from Regent Ridley, who was unable to make it today because of a prior commitment. If this board would consider tabling the approval of those minutes until our next board meeting, he had some comments of a philosophical nature, as well as some explicit references that he would like to discuss with the full board. I would encourage the board to consent to that, but I open that for discussion and, if appropriate, the appropriate motions. Motion to table approval of our first quarterly meeting, January 25th, 2013. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Regent Kennedy. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Unanimously approved. Next item of the minute approval is our special called meeting on April 1.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. We have a motion for tabling of special called meeting minutes of April 1st, 2013. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Seconded by Regent Porter. Any other questions or discussions? All in favor of the table of those minutes of April 1? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Unanimously approved. Again, before we move into the committee reports or matters, I give the floor to Dr. Ransdale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple things that I want to mention to you. First of all, at your place is a description of this building in which we are conducting our meeting that might be helpful to you. And we will have a tour of this building after our second committee portion of the meeting, after we get through the academic and finance committee parts of the agenda. There's also at your book, at your place, a book called A Beautiful Spirit, Western Kentucky University. This was a project that came out of our Office of Student Publications. Chuck Clark directs that office. Margot Grace teamed up with him to help do this, and a whole host of student talent went into the production of this book, and I want each region to have this. It's a very special collection of photographs and words that reflect our history, both past and present, and it's just a wonderful volume that I think you will enjoy. And this book will be sold in this building and elsewhere on campus going forward in the future, but I know you would enjoy having a copy of that. I do want to acknowledge James Kennedy today. Happy birthday, James.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
Yes. What a special day for you. We're glad we could share it with you.
Thank you very much.
I also want to introduce Kiana Boca. Kiana, if you'll please stand up. Kiana is SGA president. She will be sworn in later this week as SGA, or next week as SGA president. May 7th, and will take the oath of office as a regent at our summer meeting in July. But I've asked that she attend today's meeting to the extent possible, and also our called budget meeting in June to give her some advanced perspective with regard to her service as a regent beginning in July. So congratulations, Kiana, and we're glad that you're here, and we look forward to working with you. You bet. There are a couple things. You have some material at your place, and I want to point out a couple things that have just come across my desk over the last week or two that I think are particularly compelling. One is an article that was in the Wall Street Journal this past week about Image West, as you, I suspect, know, the only student-run public relations agency in America that is a for-profit advertising public relations agency. And this article appeared in the Wall Street Journal this past week, and that's pretty powerful, a testament to the good work being done at Image West in that is associated with our School of Journalism and Broadcasting. And I thought you might enjoy having this article and reading it along with the rest of America who reads the Wall Street Journal. The second item is a letter that came to my office in early April. And a lot of letters come to my office, but this one I found to be particularly compelling. It's from a non-traditional student who came back to school, and you can read for yourself the thoughts she wants to express at this point in her life as she gets ready for graduation. And at this time of year, these are the kinds of things that give us energy, that give us context to what we do and bring value to what we do as a board, as an administration, as a faculty, and as a university community. So this letter from Alyssa Serena I just found to be particularly powerful, and I hope that you will enjoy seeing her thoughts, reading her thoughts as well. And the final thing, I just came across my desk yesterday, and I didn't even have time to get it to Julia to put with your materials. And I normally don't like handing out material at a board meeting, but I'm going to pass something around to you, and I'm going to leave it up to David Porter to defend himself on it. But this came across my desk yesterday, somebody was circulating around some recollections of 1969, and I just thought you might enjoy seeing that photograph in the top center with two of our regents who were clearly in charge of student government at the time. And you know what? I'm not sure they've changed much. So just check that out. That's life on our campus in 1969, and I thought you might get a kick out of reflecting back. So, David, you're on your own from there, buddy.
Thank you.
But I was just struck that a couple board members today were leading student government at the time. So, Corey, Kiana, there you go. In another 44 years, you'll have the opportunity to show up at a board meeting. That's all. Thank you,
sir. Does anybody want to say, like, if you find my picture, you better not do this? Okay, returning back to our published agenda, we're ready to start into our committees. As you know, we have the practice of a consent agenda coming out of committees, following the format that we used at our last board meeting before turning over to the individual committee chairs to proceed. I'll, as chair, conduct an overall question as to each committee to see if there's any particular action item that a region would like to have removed from consensus agenda consideration. First, turning to the academic affairs, any action items under academic affairs that a region wants to remove from the agenda? Not hearing any, I move next to finance and budget, action items 2.1, 2.2, 2.3, and 2.4. Is there a region that would like to remove any action item listed from the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, I just had a couple of questions about personnel actions in item 2.4.
Okay. So noted, and we will remove 2.4 from the consent agenda and discuss specifically. Any other regent with a request for removal on finance and budget? Next, moving to executive committee. Any regent desiring to remove action item 3.1 or 3.2 for individual discussion? Not hearing any. We have one item for removal out of finance and budget. Those items being considered, I would entertain a motion from the board to approve the consent agenda for the remaining items, that being 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4 in academic affairs, in finance and budget, approval of 2.1, 2.2. Let's see. Let me make sure I catch up with myself. 2.3, and then an executive committee, 3.1 and 3.2.
So
moved. Moved by Regent Johnson.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Mentor. Any other discussions? Call for approval of the motion of these items being adopted by the consent format. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. So approved unanimously. We will now go to academic affairs. Dr. Dennis.
I'm going to hand it over to Gordon and ask him to discuss these items.
Thank you, Regent Dennis. And before we proceed with discussion, brief discussion of 1.1 through 1.4, we have an announcement for the board to consider. I ask Dr. Bonaguro to stand, and also our new Associate Provost and Dean of the Graduate Studies, Dr. Carl Fox, who has an announcement.
Thank you, Provost Emsley, members of the Board of Regents, President Ransdell. I'd like to announce that effective April 24th, 2013, Western Kentucky University has been granted the candidate for accreditation status by the Commission on Accreditation in Physical Therapy Education, hence our Doctor of Physical Therapy program. What this means is that it's a pre-accreditation status of affiliation with the Commission on the Accreditation of Physical Therapy Education, and indicates that our program may now begin to matriculate students. So this is a great step forward in moving our doctoral program to full fruition and full accreditation. Professional doctorate programs are designed for working professionals and those seeking professional careers that need extensive training and knowledge well beyond the baccalaureate or master's degree program. There's an ever-increasing need for professional doctorates with the demands for new information and the requirements of new professions in an ever-expanding and innovative global economy. For Western Kentucky University, this is our third professional doctoral program following the Doctorate of Nursing Practice, as well as our education doctorates in a variety of fields. The Doctor of Physical Therapy program will specifically address the healthcare and preventive needs of the Commonwealth of Kentucky with a specific emphasis on rural and underserved areas. So this is an important milestone for the graduate studies and for our degree programs in the professional doctorate arena. Thank you.
Very well done.
Thank you. And there are more coming. There are still, I believe, 4 at-large slots for professional doctor programs in the Commonwealth permitted by statute, and I know of at least 2 that are underway, and you should be hearing at a future board meeting on proposals for those programs. So thank you. John, you want anything to add?
Sorry.
You want anything to add?
Yes. Thank you, it's just a pleasure to see this come to reality. This is something that brought down my first year as a student in 2003, where we had a new programs committee to look at new programs, and PT came up there. And I want to thank everyone who's been part of that. Thank President Ransdell, Tom Pendleton, to thank the state legislature. Thank our provost for his support, putting together a budget that's unique, that has enabled us to bring this program together. Thank our our stakeholders have invested in this. We have funding from the Kentucky Hospital Association. We also have funding from We Have Care. And we're real thankful for those gifts that have come in. If it wasn't for all that support, private support to make this a public-private partnership, it would never have happened. And so I believe things happen because of shared visions. We all shared this. We all put our energy into it. And it's finally here. It's going to fulfill a major need in the healthcare rural Western Kentucky. It's also going to fulfill a tremendous need for economic development because those physical therapists for jobs and work in the communities. And it's really an economic development aspect as well. So it's combined with healthcare and physical therapy. So I'm just really grateful to have the opportunity to lead this effort and thank everyone here who shared that same vision to make it happen. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 1.1 is approval of an advanced worksite health promotion certificate. And unless there are any questions, I will defer to the consent agenda. I would like to say a few remarks about item 1.2. This is approval of an emeritus faculty appointment for Dr. Richard Bowker. Dr. Bowker became WKU since 2001. Served as biology department head, during which time both undergraduate and graduate enrollments more than doubled. Served as dean of graduate studies and research. And wishes this emeritus appointment for a very commendable reason. He continues to conduct research into thermoregulation in reptiles, especially lizards. Is still active in publishing and wishes to retain his WKU affiliation for those publications. So I present that to the board. The other two items are the two name changes, one to the Institute of Rural Health and one to the Communication Sciences and Disorders Department, both in the College of Health and Human Services. I believe no motion is necessary. Is that correct? Keep moving. One information item for you. The last committee meetings, I mentioned the REACH Week, Research Excellence in Creative Heights, and how impressed we all were with student presentations at that meeting, at that conference. And one of the remarks I made was something about a FUSE Award, Faculty Undergraduate Student Engagement. So I thought I'd take a few minutes of your time today to discuss this program, which we started last fall. It's administered by the Office of Research. Dr. Bayless was to be here, but I understand with various air traffic delays, he is still stuck on the wrong side of the Atlantic trying to get home. Molly Sweetek and Kim Hill are here from the Office of Research, and they will distribute a brief handout to you as I continue. The FUSE program is a program to engage students in the research endeavor in a very real way. They have to submit a proposal, complete with a work plan, a budget sheet, and plans for dissemination of the work at an appropriate venue. They have to get the faculty mentor identified and support. Their proposals are reviewed by internal referees within the university community and by a panel, so these are not automatic awards. The students receive a $5,000 package, although the awards are for $5,000, including money for a student stipend, student travel, faculty travel to present the results, research expenses, and most significantly, we thought we require the students to enroll in UC 400, a course entitled Faculty Undergraduate Student Research, so there's a transcripted record of this experience, and if that extra course adds to the student's tuition bill, that is covered as part of the award as well. We had a total of 100 awards over the last year, 52 in the fall, 48 in the spring. There are 60 applications pending for the fall of 2013 at this point. Another key feature of the FUSE program is that we want to leverage these opportunities into even greater things. So all students receiving a FUSE award are required to meet with the Office of Scholar Development, both at the initiation and conclusion of their project. I'd like to introduce Dr. Audra Jennings. Audra? Who is the director of our Office of Scholar Development. And Audra, I understand you've had a pretty good year.
Yes. We have application numbers were up by 62% this year. So we had 115 students apply for 133 nationally competitive awards. We're still waiting for a number of scholarship announcements, but we've already met our strategic plan goal for the year, which is 22 awards. Some highlights. At this point, WKU students have, this year alone, won over $542,000 in national competitive awards. We had our first ever Mitchell Scholarship finalist, Mr. Portadas. That is one of the most competitive scholarships in the world. We had a Truman finalist for the second year in a row, which is a very, very prestigious award. Each year we are allowed to nominate four students for the Barry Goldwater Scholarship, which is the top award for undergraduates in the sciences. Three of our four nominees received national recognition. We have our second foreign scholar in a row. So it has been a very good year. And I would like to take a moment and say that the WKU Sisterhood offered the Office of Scholarly Development a grant this year. And we have used that grant to fund a number of once-in-a-lifetime experiences. And we look forward to an even better year next year as a result of that funding.
Thank you, Audra.
So, we have three students here today to present briefly the results of their research and creative activity under the FUSE program, and their faculty mentors. I'd like to introduce the faculty mentors who will in turn introduce their students. Dr. Andy Minotowski from the Department of Psychology, who will introduce Caitlin Snyder. Tracy Moore from Theater and Dance, who introduced Jordan Campbell. And Department Head Bruce Schulte from Biology to introduce Adam Edge. So with that, I hand over to Andy.
I'd like to introduce Caitlin Snyder. She's been working with myself and Dr. Lemerys and a few students in both my lab and Dr. Lemerys' lab, and she's looking at how emotion changes across the lifespan.
Hi, everybody. Like you said, I'm Caitlin Snyder, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my project that I've been doing in the psychology department. My FUSE grant supports research on a collaborative project with Dr. Andy Minotowski, Dr. Elizabeth Lemerys, and a number of other students in the psychology department. My research focuses on examining how the process of emotion recognition changes as we grow older. Recognizing emotion is important for healthy social interactions with family, friends, and service providers. We express emotion during social interactions to communicate important information to others about how we are feeling. These clues help others in turn determine how they should treat us. Past research in the psychology of aging shows that our ability to recognize emotions in others may decline from midlife onward. This is a surprising result, given that growing older is usually associated with gaining social expertise and wisdom. Our ongoing study is examining how the positive growth that occurs with age and maturity offsets the mental declines that also occur with age when it comes to emotion recognition. For our study, we are relying on a very basic matching task. Participants in the experiment simply compare the face at the top of each display to the two at the bottom, and then choose the one that matches based on the emotion being expressed. Here are two tiles in the experiment. A person has to identify which face of the bottom two is conveying the same type of emotion as the face at the top. The correct face is on the left in both of these trials. As you can see here, we have really cut out all extraneous information, so the matching process involves just the emotional features of the face. People who take part in the study view angry, happy, disgusted, fearful, and sad faces over a range of expressive intensities. We are looking at the number of correct matches that people make for each emotion type and emotional intensity. This is an ongoing study, but we are confident in some of the results that we have found thus far. First, we know that people tend to have problems recognizing some of the emotions when they are expressed at low intensities. Younger adults are challenged with detecting anger, fear, and sadness. This is consistent with what we would expect because the regions of the brain that are responsible for interpreting the facial features for these emotions are still developing in younger people. We do not expect older adults to show these same difficulties with anger and sadness. Our past research shows that older adults do as well and sometimes better than younger adults when detecting these two emotions. This is possibly due to the fact that older adults have more life experiences with expressions of these emotions in their environment. The Muse program has been of tremendous value to my research. The program encourages students like me to support community engagement in bowling green. People who take part in the experiments are from this region, and the Fuse grant provides me with the ability to compensate our community members for traveling to WKD to work with us. The Fuse program is also valuable because it encourages young researchers like me to disseminate my work to experts in my field, other students, and to the community surrounding WKU. The funds from my Fuse grant support travel to a national conference. My team of collaborators and I have also presented at the annual student research conference during Reach Week right here at WKU. All of this exposure for our work improves my odds of earning national research fellowships and scholarships through the help of the Office of Scholar Development. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Caitlin before we move on?
There is a direct correlation listening and reading the sheet that everyone has at your place with your research and how it impacts leadership. And I don't know if your research has been interwoven with our leadership studies program, but that's something to consider in the future if it has not been. Pretty profound and high impact. Well done.
I like the fact that it also speaks to brain research and the development of the brain at different periods of time in our life. Sleep research teaches it a lot about this sort of thing. Well, I don't know if that would tie in sometime, but it's good work.
Thank you. I invite Tracy Moore to introduce Jordan.
Hello, I'm Tracy Moore. I'm a member of the theater and dance department. So I hope that you can hear me. I hope I can project well enough in the room. Thank you for inviting us here today. I would like to express my appreciation for the Fuse grant. We hear a lot in our readings about the job market, that employers are increasingly looking for students with creativity, the ability to innovate, to initiate. And this project in particular allowed Jordan Campbell to bring to bear everything that he is currently learning in our department, from the concept and the innovation all the way through to completion. So this was an excellent opportunity for him to utilize what he has been learning. I also appreciate fact, and I'm grateful to work at an institution where creative scholarship is valued highly, so I appreciate that, and I thank Dean Lee for being one of the champions. So, without further ado, I would like to speak a moment about Jordan Campbell. Jordan is from Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and Jordan has been a standout in our department since the moment he arrived. If you've seen any of our productions at the gorgeous and beautifully renovated Van Meter, Jordan appeared as a sophomore as the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, and then as a junior as Curly in Oklahoma, so he's had major roles in both of those productions, which took place at Van Meter. So he's been a standout, and he's worked to combine his interest in political science with his creative interest in musical theater. It's also his birthday, so I debated having him on stage, because I'm known for making little shows wherever I go. So we will spare you the musical entertainment, but in any case, I'm going to turn it over to Jordan now and let him speak about this project.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Yes, I did study in Ghana. Go to the clicker here. Okay. So while I was there, my first impression when I first got there was the people there were just absolutely wonderful. They were so welcoming. And obviously, as we can see here, very joyful. And I worked with children primarily, but everyone in Ghana welcomed me into the community, into their tribes, into their cities. I felt very welcome. This is the group that I worked with, but I actually studied at the University of Ghana while I was there. And I also wrote choreographed and directed a show at the West Africa AIDS Foundation with AIDS Positive Youth. With around 30 children and teens, we conducted class twice a week. And so we would sing and dance and act and kind of explore. We would paint and draw. And it was kind of an uplifting experience for these children. And so now the performance piece that I created while I was in Ghana is now going to be rehearsed and performed annually on World AIDS Day in Accra, capital city. This is one of my absolute favorite children that I met while I was there. This is Raphael, and he's always full of energy and smiles, and he loved to sing. And so one day we were talking about music, and he somehow acquired some old American CDs. One of them, his favorite singer is Kenny Rogers. So when I found that out, I told him that my favorite singer was Dolly Parton. And and so we actually sang Islands in the Stream together. So that was just an amazing connection that I had to make that bond with the child in Ghana, and we were singing this song that we both knew. Unfortunately, his health is very poor, and a few times during classes he wouldn't be able to make it through class because of his sickness, and that was heartbreaking for me. But I was also very happy that the Peace Grant allowed me to make these connections and to do my part to uplift these children's lives. And also, it's important to mention that within the Peace Grant, there's a $500 award to the students that you can spend however you choose. Being a 22-year-old, I'm sure you know that there are plenty of things I could spend my money on. But I did choose to put my money back into funding at West Africa AIDS Foundation and hopefully help children like Raphael with their medication and such. So not only did Fuse impact my life and the lives of the students at WKU that I get to do African dance classes with and those types of things, but it's going much further. It's affecting people all around the world. So I'd like to thank the Provost Office and the board for letting me present this. Thank you.
Any questions for Jordan or Tracy?
Oh, yes, all the students that I worked with while I was there were HIV or AIDS positive.
Okay, thank you very much. And continuing the Africa connection, I'd like to introduce Bruce Schulte, who will in turn introduce Adam.
Thank you. Thanks for having us here today. I'll just give a little background on the project. I've been working with elephants for 20 years, and if you're aware of the news, you know that poaching is a huge issue now, leading potentially to the loss of elephants in our lifetime if things don't get better. So it's a really important issue. There's another also very important issue to the people that live daily with elephants, and that's called human-wildlife conflict, or more specifically, human-elephant conflict. And we might think about that in this country as the interaction, we say, with a white-tailed deer. It might come in and eat your roses. You might hit one in with your car on the highway. When you hit a 10,000-pound elephant, it's a little bit different story. The elephant usually wins. When they come into your crops lose. When they come into your home, your house loses, and sometimes people die. So it's a very big issue in any parts of the world that have elephants. We tend to think of them as nature shows, and they're beautiful, lovely animals. The other part, though, about elephants is that they're a very important part of the environment. They're called ecosystem engineers. They take down forests and create grasslands, and they spread seeds and fertilize the grasslands and turn them into forests. That's super for the ecosystem, except when humans get involved, as you know, if you've got a forest in your backyard, you may not want it to become a grassland, or vice versa. And that's where this study comes into play. The Pew Grant allowed us to have undergrad students actually get involved in this. It's hard to be working out in a short period of time. You need months and months to get the people who trust you, and then to get to know the area, to learn the language a little bit perhaps. And so the Pew's Grant allowed Adam to stay over in Africa for 6 months, really get to know the area. And he'll talk more about his experiences, but that's sort of the background. Adam is a junior, just a junior, an honor student biology major. He just received a notice that he's got an internship to work with the Alaska Fish and Game for this summer, so he'll be going from Africa to Alaska and another big area. So he's just a really talented guy, but this Pew's Grant's really given him the opportunity to get involved in research in a very first-hand manner, and I'll let Adam talk about that.
Thank you. As he says, I was recently in South Africa for a long time. Now, my research, I'm looking at human perception survey studies, looking at their attractiveness of different elephant types, whether it be a large male versus a large female, and so on. Also looking at the attractiveness levels of different trees and at different levels of elephant impact, such as perfectly healthy trees, that one is, or one that's completely knocked over. I'm also looking at whether different elephant management methods are supported or not. So the two industries that were surveyed were tourists. I went to different lodges around the area and handed out surveys. I also handed surveys to the residents of the areas, that could be landowners, shareholders, and one of that sort. Now, the reason for doing this is you need to find the balancing point between the tourists and landowner perceptions to make both groups happy. This can then be translated into conservation methods that a land manager might use when the directive is ecologically focused or economically focused. Now, some of the results, I won't worry too much, but some of the results of the attractiveness levels between residents and tourists did differ greatly with elephants. All elephant types received high attractiveness ratings, so one type did receive more credit than the other. High impacted trees receive a lower attractiveness rating than healthy trees, which is expected. That's obviously a more attractive tree than a healthy tree. But herein lies the problem. Whereas people like healthy trees, they also like all elephant types. And as Dr. Shelby said, the elephants have a high impact on the trees. So that's where the issue kind of lies. You have to find that balancing point. Also found was that residents support more intensive elephant management methods and tours, such as culling. I don't know if y'all have heard of that, but it's just a selective killing of elephants to reduce the population. It's a big controversy over there. But overall, none of this would have been able to happen without the Pew's Grant. It has allowed me to kind of live out my dreams and do research abroad and then bring it back here to present to you all or people at conferences such as Posters at the Capitol or Reach Week that's hosted here. Another advantage is that recipients receive course credit and it's put on our transcript so any graduate schools that look at our transcripts can understand the importance of receiving the award. Overall, I'm just thankful for what it's allowed me to do. I've been able to gain awesome experience, and I'm going to push towards the career as well.
Adam, I noticed that your faculty mentors cut across at least two different colleges. Describe the interdisciplinary nature of your work between biology and sociology.
I'll see it as a sociological research for a biological purpose. So I work with Dr. Gary today. He's big into human research, so he helped me set up my survey. And then I kind of translate that with Dr. Schulte into biological methods. And Dr. Michelle Henley is a big elephant expert who I would say the elephant in South Africa and South Africa.
Elephants are supposed to have long memories.
Yes.
Is any part of your research that was fascinating in that regard?
Not personally, but you hear stories about that all the time. Elephants that have been hunted, there's a group, and there's a story I heard that one elephant's sister was shot and hunted, and ever since then, that elephant's sister has recovered, and every arm that's pulled up, that she's charged the car every time. This has happened for like 10 years with that woman. So I definitely remember their social structure is just amazing.
I believe Regent Bell wishes to have a comment.
I wasn't sure how the agenda worked, and I want to make a few comments about the advanced sports site health promotion. First of all, I think it's a great project, and I didn't know if it was because it's my first meeting you were trying to be kind and put something on here that I knew something about, or whether it's a test. And if Dr. Watkins or Dr. English are here, it's something I'd love to discuss with them, having been involved in workplace health care for going on 40 years now. But I think there can be a lot of spinoffs to this beyond what they describe here. And in order to make our healthcare system better, we have to produce data. And this is going to be a goldmine for research. Because the workplace is one place in America where people really get it that we need change and we need transformation and we need more value. The CEOs and the CFOs who are writing the checks. So I hope as they progress with this, and like I say, I'd love to talk to them about it sometime, but tremendous research potential there on a lot of different levels. We also have a foundation in Kentucky that is concerned with meeting the unmet health care needs of Kentuckians, the Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky in Louisville, and I think they'd be very interested in knowing what we're trying to develop down here, because it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Dr. Bell, I know Gary and Cecilia are at some conferences today, but this came about for the whole reason you mentioned, worksite health promotions becoming incorporated within the Affordable Health Care Act. Employers are very much looking at ways to keep that insurance premiums down, and it's written into the Health Care Act that employers would address that. So this is meant to reach those individuals who are in worksite settings, that they have the credentials to promote health, because many times you may find a health care provider that's doing it, such as a nurse, and nursing is a discipline by itself, but not really understand the concepts of health promotion. So this is an online program. We expect tremendous growth in it, and also a lot of research to come out. We are looking at right now a way to partner with pilot gasoline stations, because there's one of our alums, Tony Barber, who's involved in providing some convenient health care centers through pilot. And so we're looking at ways to improve the health of truckers and health promotions. We see this as very much that research component. And if you're not aware much about the health of truckers, but 80% are men, but there's 20% are women, but they run special risk with overweight, diabetes, and high blood pressure. And so we're looking at ways now that no one else is looking at in this field. So it's fantastic. Certainly appreciate your support, and I'm glad to connect you you know, with our faculty. I'm sure they'd welcome that to partner any way we can with
you. You know, we will be doing this electronically as far as putting the data and stuff in there.
Yes, absolutely.
It also supports the team concept, and as healthcare transformation occurs, in whatever manner it does, it has to involve teams. And these people will be very important.
Yeah. The whole aspect of interprofessional training is something we're very much in education about. That's something that also will happen in our new facility. Maybe that's coming up at another spot, but our health sciences complex has some state of the technology in which you plan and have very specific programs to deal with the interprofessional education of all of our disciplines, because health promotion crosses many of those disciplines together. So,
and that brings up another article I read recently that has coined the term data scientists, and right now there aren't any data scientists as such, but universities would be a great place for us to develop data scientists who are going to be able to put together this huge amount of information that's generated by electronic medical records. Mm-hmm. to find out what works, what doesn't work, where the value is. So, great program.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I think that's been very informative. I really enjoyed the views representation.
We next turn.